This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ben Standing is with us, as he is every Monday, an hour earlier, because we've got Denny McCarthy, who will join us at 12 to talk about yesterday's incredible sporting event. I think Ben enjoyed it as well. We'll get to some football here in a moment. Ben, of course, on X, on Twitter, at Ben Standing, has a podcast called Last Man Standing. And, of course, you can read him at The Athletic, as I do, as a subscriber. I think you actually texted me at some point during it. I don't know that everybody felt that way. I think there are a lot of people, you know, listening to this show right now that are not big golf fans and don't really get the, the drama that I said was one of the best sports dramas of the year, if not the best sports drama of the year so far. What did you think?
Again, it's funny. Probably the text thread that I'm on the most with two of my friends, as I was trying to explain to them what was happening, they both said to me proudly that they've never watched 1 second of the Masters. And I was just like, I don't even comprehend that. Even if you're not into golf, like, I'm not into NASCAR necessarily. I've watched the Daytona 500. You know, like, when there's compelling human drama and there's a competitive aspect to it, I mean, I definitely want to see it. And the Masters is obviously off the charts. And Rory, I mean, that was the greatest, you know, sports/therapy session I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he laid it all out there. The highs and the lows were so extreme. And to see one guy go through that, knowing what's at stake, it's not just winning a tournament, not just winning a major. It's to get to the career Grand Slam, and we know the trials and tribulations he's had before this. So to see him go through that, where multiple times it looked like he was going to run away with it, or he was going to completely collapse, and then for it to, you know, him to finally make, you know, enough shots to get it done. I mean, that was especially when, again, in team sports, which is our usual discussions. It's a team. It isn't, you know, there may be the quarterback and there may be the best player, but it is still a team sport. Here, it is just you. It is, I mean, you've got your caddy there to talk to you. Other than that, you have to walk in front of the world and show exactly what you're thinking, because he's not, he's not hiding it well. And it was off the charts crazy. What a day.
Yeah, it's like I don't get those, even non-golf fans, but are sports fans or just fans of drama. It could be a television show or a movie that didn't feel. Look, there's a backstory there that you had to be familiar with to a certain degree, but if you were just watching the end when he missed the short putt on 18 to win it, and then the idea that he's now got to go line up and play a playoff against the guy that shot the round of the tournament, you know, on the final day in Justin Rose, that to me, I just, you know, I don't really care about tweeting out a bunch of stuff when these things happen. Everybody, I mean, Twitter was just exhausting last night in so many ways, but also thrilling in many ways too. But I just said to my wife who was watching it, I'm like, that what we just watched, that's why, because she really is one of those people that couldn't care less necessarily about sports. She's not a real sports person. And I said, that's what makes sports great. That. What we just watched, and the reaction was so, if you knew anything about this story, to see his reaction, you know, one of my callers who calls a lot, Ian, said, you know, it was similar to like when Jordan won and broke through, and when LeBron finally, you know, won and broke through. You know, for me, you know, I thought about Elway when he finally broke through. There are moments like that, but it is, that was genuine, man. He's been carrying that around for more than a decade. You know, if you want to say a decade's too long because it's been 11 years, but you don't really start feeling the pressure until you haven't won one for 2 or 3 years, every bit of the last 7 to 8 years.
Yeah, I was as a, like, I'm not a Team Rory guy, although even I at the end was like, dude, you got to make this putt. Don't miss this. But like, it's sort of like how, like, you know, when the Cubs and the Red Sox had those crazy long streaks of never winning a World Series, and part of the, what makes it fun for the rest of us who are not fans of those teams is every year, you know, this is a topic. Every year, this is going to be a real pivot point, and you know that there's tension, and that's what Rory was. I kind of almost selfishly, like, didn't want it to happen because I wanted the topic to keep going. But, yeah, I mean, to see him, you know, to see the emotion out of him like that, and you know, you knew it was there. But I mean, but just I don't know. Like, we've seen in sports, you know, one team scores a touchdown, the other team drives down, hits a touchdown, gets a touchdown, or you know, a basketball game, you know, somebody hits a shot and they go back. This was one guy doing it to himself. He just kept going up. He kept going down. You know, at the point Jim Nantz said he hit a shot of a lifetime, he proceeded to hit like 2 or 3 more shots of a lifetime after that.
Yeah.
So the swings were crazy. I mean, everything else was happening around him. I mean, you know, big kudos to Justin Rose, who I've always liked, you know, 10 birdies on the final round of the Masters. You know, you can't ask for more than that. And, you know, DeChambeau had his, you know, brief lead. It was crazy that Oberg actually had a putt for the lead. And like, it was like an ultimate afterthought, the way, especially the way his round ended. But it was just all happening around Rory. He was the driving force of everything. And, dude, I think, like I said, I'm so glad he made the last putt. I could not have imagined a scenario otherwise. So glad that he did that. Yeah, like I said, even if I admit I wasn't really rooting for Rory, but, wow, that was just unbelievably compelling.
Yeah, Oberg, by the way, contributed to the drama because of how long it took him to play 18. You know, he triple bogeyed 18, which meant they were sitting there on the tee box waiting. I mean, Rory had lunch. You know, he was eating some sort of protein bar and had a drink and was waiting to get to the tee to hit it. It was, there was a lot that sort of contributed to it, including, and I talked about this, I mean, anybody that is any, you know, even remotely familiar with Rory's history, I thought, and I saw people tweet this out, and I felt the same way, that Nantz was treating it like it was a victory march when he got to the 18 tee box. I'm like, dude, he's up his shot. He could easily double bogey this hole and lose outright. Like, you know, this, you know, he had the whole backstory stuff, you know, on his growing up in the driving range and the token down to one token, 30 balls left, the whole thing, talking about his parents and the whole thing. I'm like, this is not, you know, this is going, I mean, I was nervous when he stepped to the tee box over and over again yesterday. I thought that the first time I got really nervous for him was when he stepped to the tee box at 10 because he had been there in 2011 with the lead, and he had a 4-shot lead, and that tee shot was so huge. But then it all came, you know, crushing, you know, I mean, the thing was burying him, you know, after his double at 13 and his bogey at 14, and then to come up with the shots that he hit at 15 and 17. The funny thing is he missed a bunch of putts, like those majestic 15 and 17 hole shots were also, he missed the eagle putt and he missed one at 16. which really could have extended the lead out and made it less dramatic. But it was everything that the individual struggle specifically in sports is all about, man. That was on full display.
No doubt. We have a mutual friend who, by the second hole, was like already, I think, on the verge of like throwing up because Rory looked like he was about to throw up the whole thing. And then three holes later, he's up like three shots. And just, yeah, I mean, the amount of times that that pendulum swung of what you thought was going to happen, and just seeing this one guy going through it, and to know that, like, that's the thing, like, and like, in terms of, like, the Jim Nance, you're right, Jim Nance made it feel like a coronation. I had other people say to me, boy, Jim Nance is focused solely on Rory, even though everybody else was kind of around him. But that's the thing, it was like, there are some individuals that we all see that we recognize have the gift from the gods, like, that they have got, there's, when they win, it isn't just that they were the winner. There's something special there. This is another moment of a chapter in what is clearly has the potential to be an all-time career because of the heights they can reach. And this kid had this, you know, for, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 years at this point, whatever it is. Like, he's been that guy. If somebody was going to even sniff the level that Tiger got to, it would be right. Him. And he showed it. And we all remember the U.S. Open at the Congressional and all that, and then it's been his decade of just like, dude, are you gonna what's the deal here? Are you gonna close this out? You know, not just the Masters. I mean, he blew what was it, the U.S. Open last year.
Yeah, at Pinehurst
to DeChambeau. So, like, you know, he's had this, and he had it yesterday. I mean, he definitely, you know that account Old Takes Exposed. They retweeted somebody who earlier in the round said that Rory was gonna choke. He did. He did like 15 times, but then he kept coming back. That's the part. Normally when the guy chokes, he doesn't do the most incredible shot the next time, but he kept doing it. So it was epic fun.
You know, one of the interesting things about golf, unlike almost every other sport that we follow, you know, it's more skill than it is anything else. You know, it's not necessarily overwhelming athleticism. It's a refined skill. But part of the game of golf, when you have nerves, unlike other sports, you can't get them out through some level of physical contact. Like, you hear football players talk all the time. It's like, man, I was so nervous until I got hit for the first time. You know, basketball or hockey, you know, I guess baseball to a certain extent is that way too, but there's no physical way to get rid of the nerves. You have to deal with it somehow. And to your point, I actually thought when DeChambeau made that long putt at 18 on Saturday, I thought Rory was in trouble. Based on what we've seen from him, DeChambeau actually kind of delivers in these moments, and Rory hasn't. And when he doubled number one, I thought it was over. I thought it was definitely over. I thought DeChambeau would win and maybe going away. So yeah, he choked there. He choked at two. He choked at, you know, obviously 13. That's a shank in a big spot where you're playing it safe. And at the same time, you know, all of that was surrounded by some of the incredible, brilliant shot making that we've seen throughout his entire career. It was riveting for sure. I mean, it's a long day. You know, I remember many years ago, my wife said to me, "What? You're going to sit here and watch golf for 5 hours? What? Football's one thing." No, that golf on a Sunday with that kind of matchup is must watch sports television. I've not seen the ratings. I would assume it killed it. Not Tiger-esque. Nothing reaches Tiger-esque levels, but that had to be, you know, a massive number that CBS did yesterday.
Yeah. And look, the thing with the Masters is we always talk about the back nine on Sunday being where the drama is. You know, this was drama from like the first shot Rory
hit. The jump.
And yeah, to sustain it that whole time. Like, that's not, like, oftentimes in sports, like, a game will come down, like NCAA tournament, right? A game will come down to the last couple seconds. Somebody hits a game-winning shot. And everybody goes, wow, what a game. And not really. It's like it was a great last few minutes. The rest of it was, you know, somewhat forgettable. This was high-wire act from the first stroke all the way through to the literal last one, both directions. You know, this is the antithesis of Nick Faldo winning a major with 18 pars on the final Sunday. This was, off the charts. And look, you know, he had to have, obviously Justin Rose had to get into the mix there, obviously just to force the playoff. And, you know, he had to fend off a couple other guys here and there. You know, at one point Rory was losing by a shot in the midst of his collapse at 13. And then, you know, Rose, you know, was able to hold on to some degree. Oberg fell off. I don't know what else to say other than just like what that was. If you're into competition and you're into drama, and I don't care again what the sport is per se, if you have any sense of the backstory, you just have a feel why watching it, like you said, that you could, hey, they're explaining this guy is trying to do something that only five other people in the history of the sport have ever done. He's tried it now umpteen times and always just not comes up short. Like Justin Rose is now, you know, he's been second in the last two majors. It's unbelievable to me. He only has the one major win. Like he should have a lot more, but it's not like, but it's also just the way he carried himself. Justin Rose, like even yesterday, was like, hey man, I did the best I could. It didn't work. Rory, like it's just constantly like wearing it on his sleeve. He skips media availabilities. His post game on Saturday, talking to CBS, it's Amanda Baleonis. Like that guy looked like he was about to lose by 10 shots tomorrow. The next day, he was so nervous, you could tell, and that's what makes it also so compelling. One of the best players of all time also has this. Greg Norman had massive collapses. He also did win a little bit, but the collapse is more defined him than anything. Rory, he loses that he's going to have that legacy too.
Yeah. It's the first thing you talk about when you talk about his career is the absolute meltdown at the Masters in 2025. We talked a lot about this last week, and I forget if I even had this conversation with you, but I would put right now the player and or coach that replaces Rory in that, you know, has to win hot seat. I put Lamar Jackson in that seat right now more than anybody else. Do you have somebody that you think is feeling the pressure of winning more than him in sports?
That's a really good one. That may be. I was thinking about this in terms of golf, like who is the person now that doesn't have something, a major or whatever. And I hadn't quite figured out the definitive answer. Lamar Jackson. I mean, look, we talk about it in the same way every year we go into the NFL season discussing, is this the year that it finally happens? And every time he has a playoff game, it's a referendum on his legacy and what does it mean if they lose or whatever. So, yeah, I think that's a really good one for sure. I mean, Josh Allen has obviously also has yet to win one.
He got his first MVP, I think Lamar's ahead of him. And Lamar hasn't played well in the postseason. Yeah. Josh Allen has.
Right. Josh Allen, by all rights, should have beaten Kansas City the year when Mahomes led them to a game-tying field goal with 13 seconds left. I think that makes the most sense. Like, we're in this unique era where, like, tennis, like, all, other than Djokovic, all the, the guys who've been around for a while have retired, essentially. The NFL or the NBA is going through this shit changing of the guard right now with LeBron, Curry, et cetera, sort of on the verge of fading out, but the younger guys are not as compelling yet. Like, I'm not worrying about Anthony Edwards winning a title or whatever, but that's a ways to go. So, yeah, Lamar's a pretty good one.
Yeah, I was thinking, too, last night, who's the best player in golf right now not to win a major? You know, Lee Westwood was that guy for so many years, and he never got it done. There's really not anybody. I mean, Cantlay hasn't won one. Finau hasn't won one. Hovland, but, I guess it might be Ricky Fowler. But Fowler, it's been so long since he's been a top-level player. He has, when's the last time he won? Or did he win in the last 2 years on tour?
No, Ricky, I had this exact conversation yesterday. Ricky Fowler's faded off too far, and Hovland's too young, and, Finau, sure, but, like, it's not the same thing. Right. He's a contender, but not at the highest level.
Right. Talking to Ben Standing. All right, let's switch it to football. I was talking about Josh Johnson and the incredible story that Josh Johnson is career-wise. 14 NFL teams, 25th time now. His return to Washington, 25th time he has changed pro teams. You and I had this conversation on Friday, I believe. Boy, they have a building full of people for Jaden Daniels to, you know, to see if he has a question about anything. I mean, they've got unbelievable, intangible maturity in that building for that quarterback, not to mention a new left tackle.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. You know, one thing that blew my mind, this is not about Washington, but when Bill Belichick, you know, time was up with New England, and they talked about bringing in a new staff, and they said they were going to have a quarterback coach for the first time in, I don't know, for how many years, because he never had one. Obviously he had Tom Brady for him, but like even when Brady left, they never had a quarterback coach. I'm like, that's bizarre. That's just like an obvious thing. That's one guy. Here, yeah, I mean, you know, to have a guy like David Blau on staff who's already getting a reputation as a really good offensive mind who had just played in the league the year before, right, to be on staff. He's like the seventh guy, you know, after Kingsbury and after Tavita Pritchard and Brian Johnston, and, you know, to have Marcus Mariota there for this purpose. And obviously, you know, Dan Quinn's not a quarterback guy, but he's, you know, he's coached against him. He's been a head coach. And now you add in Josh Johnson, who's going to be, what, 39 during, or I think 39 next month. He's obviously been there, done that, you know. We can say, hey, look, he's never really been a starter, but there's a reason teams keep bringing him back over and over and over again. And he's clearly got some wisdom to share. And like I said to you, I think when we talked the other day on your podcast, like it's a curious move to me, because I would have thought, if anything, you sign a third guy or draft a third guy to potentially be your QB2 next year. Right, when Mariota's only got the 1 year deal. Instead, they go like the complete opposite way and sign somebody who's, you know, never viewed as the future for anything, unless it's the very shortest of short right, timeline futures. So that was very curious to me. And, you know, obviously we'll see, can Sam Hartman beat him out? Do they actually still, you know, somehow end up with another young quarterback in the draft or post draft? But yeah, Josh Johnson, I mean, that's, a guy that, you know, if he has to play, he can help a little bit, but, he certainly should be able to help Jaden Daniels, learn the game even more.
That's crazy that New England never had a QB coach all of those years. Like, even in, like, I'm thinking about just his last few years, Belichick, when he had Mac Jones, you didn't have a QB coach. I understand.
I don't know the duration of it. And obviously, you know, they had Josh McDaniel, and that counts as like.
Right. They had Bill O'Brien. The guy that ended up being the Notre Dame coach in the early Brady years.
Charlie Weiss, yeah.
Charlie Weiss.
Right. But to not have like in this era where teams have, you know, that's become the thing the last few years. These guys get promoted to being pass game coordinator, or this, that, the other. Like,
yeah.
You know, and you're like, you have all these different things, but you don't have one. I'm not positive how many years he didn't have one, but he didn't have one at least towards the end. And yeah, that's just an incredible. And look, this is also the same guy that had Matt Patricia, a defensive guy, be the offensive coordinator 1 year. So I don't know what Belichick was doing in this regard, they're not lacking for that here. And look, there's no salary cap on coaches and staff. So if you have the wherewithal and the owner is willing to spend and, you know, you know how what you're looking for in terms of other thinkers, then, yeah, the more the merrier isn't always great. But in this instance, do whatever you can to help the quarterback. Absolutely go for it.
A year later, because we are a week and a half away from the NFL draft, do you think there's anybody anywhere in the league that believes Chicago picked the right guy?
I would guess the answer is yes. I mean, look, it was – look, Jaden Daniels certainly had his backers. I mean, you know, and Washington has, you know, seemingly said they would have taken him first and all that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, look, in general, I mean, I was certainly doing a lot of homework prior to that draft. And, you know, in general, most people seem to prefer Caleb Williams. And maybe that's following the herd. But, you know, there was obviously a lot to it. We'd heard about Caleb Williams – for several years, whereas Jaden, it was, you know, a bit more of a late push to get all the way up to that level. So yeah, I'm sure there are some people who say, hey, look, he was on a dumb team. they were going to get rid of their coach. Their coach wasn't an offensive guy. Their offensive line wasn't good. The Bears are the Bears, you know, all those things. So, yeah, I guess the answer would be yes, but clearly that number's got to be a lot, you know, a lot fewer than it was a year ago.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's anybody, like if NFL people who were asked to go back and redraft last year, how many drafts, redrafts, Caleb Williams goes third or even fourth behind, say, a Drake May? I don't think he's going behind Bo Nix. I think that was system-driven as much as anything else. But I bet you a lot of people redrafting would have had Chicago taking Jaden Daniels, Washington taking Drake May second.
Yeah, I don't think that's a crazy thought. I mean, look, you know, in terms of the Caleb Williams part of this, you know, look, he's got Ben Johnson, right? I mean, now Ben Johnson, you know, we're viewing Ben Johnson as, you know, he's on the Mount Rushmore of offensive thinkers. I kid, but, like, that's the way the hype's been the last couple of years. So, if, you know, if somehow he can't get it done here, then, you know, if Caleb Williams doesn't look better this year, doesn't have to go to the Pro Bowl, doesn't have to lead the Bears to a division title, but, like, if we're not seeing more, then, you know, it's still early in the career. But then at that point, like, okay, well, we can't just blame the Bears for all these other things. They, you know, they've rebuilt their offensive line. They've got Ben Johnson. You know, they've done a lot of good things on paper to help this kid. So, yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, certainly the gap is much narrower, if not Jaden's in the lead in terms of who you would rather have. But I still think there's probably people out there who think that in the right setup, Caleb Williams is the better guy.
When is Washington going to sign Terry McLaurin to a contract extension?
Yeah, I mean, you know, not that there's not some urgency, right, just to get it done. You know, it's there. A lot of times, of course, as we know, deadlines create deals, and there's no real deadline here at the moment. I mean, I'm sure Washington is like, hey, look, we got to get through the draft. You know, when Terry signed his contract the last time, it was post-draft, and I know that's a completely different regime, but just saying that that happened then. So, you know, look, there's no major urgency. I guess, you know, OTAs and the workouts, you know, that all starts, you know, a few weeks after the draft. To me, that's sort of the deadline. So you would like to think he gets it done, they get something done before then, so he doesn't miss any sessions the way he did in 22 when he did sit out a few. So, you know, no rush, but once we get here post draft, that's got to be, you know, probably the number one topic is, when's this thing going to get done?
Talking to Ben Standing, Washington currently with 5 picks in the upcoming draft, which is a week from Thursday night. They've got a first rounder at number 29, a second rounder at number 61. They've got a fourth rounder, a sixth rounder, and a seventh rounder. How many players do they end up drafting in the upcoming draft?
I'll say 6. I mean, I think they do at least make one trade to do something. The question is that going to be at 29, where you would obviously be able to likely get more, you know, the most stuff. So maybe at that point you can get, you know, 2 picks, beyond, you know, just the swapping of a first for a second. And then maybe you can get like a fourth and a sixth, or a third, or, you know, a third and something, or maybe it's like a fourth and a third rounder next year. They've obviously already lost some picks. So I suspect they make at least a trade. It's just a matter of, is it the trade that gets you more because you move out of 29? That is the question. And I think that, you know, the quarterback conversation will be an important one there in terms of other teams looking to move up for quarterbacks. I do kind of get the fear. I fear now that, like, the quarterbacks may just go too early and 29 won't be as exciting for that. But yeah, I think they make a trade some points. I'll say 6.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this before, but I think this is a draft that most draft people, and Ben will have his final mock out, you know, the night before the draft. Ben's a multi-time mock draft champion. He'll have a lot of stuff out this week. When do you do your Washington draft for The Athletic?
I think I have to have that up like Monday, Tuesday of the draft week.
So yeah, a week from today. I think one of the things that there seems to be some consensus on is that this is a terrible quarterback draft. And number 2 is that out of the 32 first-round picks, there are probably only 20 to 22 first-round worthy players, which says to me that the chances of being able to trade back to a team interested in getting into the first round would obviously be player specific, but there are other teams that will be looking to do the same as well in and around where Washington picks. So maybe not the easiest trade back draft. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's fair. You know, back, you know, even a month ago when we were talking about the draft in terms of quarterbacks, and it was Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, are they going to go 1-2? You know, it doesn't seem like that will be the case now that Shedeur falls a little bit, maybe a lot of bit. We'll see. But now, like Jackson Dart, quarterback from Ole Miss, you know, kind of feels like he's going to be in the first round. And could there be even a fourth? We know that Jalen Milroe, the Alabama quarterback, is apparently accepted invitation to go to the draft, which typically means you got some sense you're going to be a first-round pick, not just the player, but that the league does. Otherwise, you wouldn't make the invite typically to have a kid sit there. And, you know, so are there going to be four quarterbacks in round one? Again, if that happens, then maybe, you know, the trade-ups are really a thing. I think the only other position to me that sort of stands out is offensive tackle, because if you look at the various big boards that are out there at public, you know, there's a handful of those offensive tackles who are going in the top 25 or so picks. And then between 25 and like 75, there might be two that are going based on projections. So, you know, if that's the case, then if you want to tackle, you better jump up quick. So, you know, that might be another position where, sure, maybe they're not like the individual player isn't truly worth like moving up a ton. But if you want that position, you may not have a choice. So that would be the only other one for me, I think, that could be interesting. Guy like Josh Simmons from Ohio State, Josh Connerly from Oregon, Kelvin Banks from Texas. If those guys slip into the 20s, that could be a boon for teams like Washington looking to trade up.
All right, last one. I did see some video of Jaden, I guess, over the weekend at Brandon Ayuk's wedding, I think it was. Uh-huh. Do you have any idea if he was close with Kyron Lacy, the LSU receiver who was found dead in an apparent suicide on late Saturday night?
Yeah, he posted Jaden on social media on his Instagram account, posted a bunch of photos of them together, you know, with like Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas and that whole group. And, you know, to what extent, you know, I don't know to the level of their closeness, but yeah, there was definitely a tight bond there, you know, going through, you know, college together, and obviously Lacy was getting ready for the draft. But yeah, so you're definitely there. I mean, obviously, I guess it's somewhat bad timing if, you know, one of your other good friends are getting married. But yeah, he definitely showed some, you know, put up some videos and some pictures on Instagram that expressed his, you know, sadness for losing his friends.
Yeah, really sad. He was going to be, I mean, there was some issues, obviously, with a traffic incident in which somebody passed away, I think, towards the end of February, I believe it was. Or, but he was a talent and a potential first-round pick in the 26th draft. All right, thanks. Talk to you end of the week.
Yeah, man. See ya.
Ben Standig, everybody. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nico Iamaleva is a quarterback who played for Tennessee last year. Very talented quarterback. Big dude, if you watched college football last year. 6'6", 220. Had some good games for a Tennessee team that ended up in the postseason. Remember, they played in the playoff round against Ohio State on, I think that was the Friday night or Saturday night game. He was terrible in that game. There were a couple of other games. He played a game against Georgia in which he was not very good. Had some rough spots here and there, but, you know, a tremendous talent at 6'6", 220 with an arm and incredible mobility. You know, some comparisons to some other big, tall, you know, rangy quarterbacks, even to Cam Newton, just a slender version during the course of the year. I got paid a bunch of money to go to Tennessee. And then last week decided to, you know, let Tennessee know that he wanted his current deal, which was $2.4 million, on a commitment that he had made to Tennessee that he wanted to renegotiate his NIL deal, college athletes holding out. And so you got this moment last week where, you know, Tennessee quarterback Nico Iamaleva was holding out for a renegotiated NIL deal. He wanted his deal to be in the $4 million range. And Tennessee basically told him to go pound sand. Josh Heupel, the coach at Tennessee, said, quote, "No one is bigger than the program," closed quote. The tipping point came when Iamaleva did not post for the first practice of spring football. We had a lot of spring football from over the weekend. As he was going through these NIL contract discussions, apparently he had his representatives reach out prior to spring practice to other teams, including Oregon. But Oregon apparently told him they weren't interested. And so Tennessee basically said, quote, "This program's been around for a long time," Josh Heupel said. "There are a lot of great coaches, a lot of great players who came before that laid the cornerstone pieces, the legacy, the tradition that is Tennessee football. It's going to be around a long time after I'm gone and after they're gone," close quote. They notified him that they were no longer interested in having him on the team. So he is entering the transfer portal and will be looking for a new place to play football. It'll be interesting to see who's willing to give this guy what he wants. I really, in watching him last year, I thought he was one of those examples. Look, a very young player. He played. They played an early season game in Norman against Oklahoma. Oklahoma turned out to be a not very good football team. And they won the game, but he was just horrendous in the game. until he got it going a little bit, you know, in the second half. He had another bad game. They lost to Arkansas. Mentioned that he did not play well at Georgia, didn't play well at all in the playoff game against Ohio State. There were some moments where his athleticism and his arm strength were on display. He was just one of those guys that you could tell didn't see it, didn't process it quickly. Not that as a super young player that couldn't have improved, but it wasn't natural. You know, it wasn't natural. But we'll see what happens. There is obviously still the possibility that this month we get Congress, we get the, you know, the so-called salary cap provision passed. That won't be the same as NIL, but NIL might be regulated a little bit more and we'll get more traditional NIL. Anyway, one of those interesting stories from over the weekend that had a lot of them. You know, over the weekend, there was a lot. By the way, speaking of a lot, before we get to Denny McCarthy at noon, when we come back on the other side, Maryland men's basketball went through it, man. Exciting season, exciting Sweet 16 run in the tournament, only to lose its head coach to Villanova, only to hire then another head coach, and to lose almost every player that was on the roster last year. Well, Buzz Williams right now has a transfer portal class that is climbing the rankings. More on that next. So Maryland basically not only lost its head coach when Kevin Willard left, but it basically lost its entire roster. And two key players that almost, you know, I shouldn't say assuredly, because I think Jacoby Gillespie, there was always a chance he would go to Tennessee after this season ended. He wanted to go back home. But there would have been a chance that Rodney Rice and Jacoby Gillespie would have been, you know, key parts of a team that if they had come back next year with Kevin Willard, Maryland probably would have been a preseason top 25 type of team. Buzz Williams came in, and basically the whole roster is gone. But in a week and a half, I guess it's been a week and a half at this point, he has added 8 players via the portal to the roster. 8. Couple of good ones over the weekend. Isaiah Watts, a big-time guard out of Washington State, probably their highest-ranked portal guy, was added. They had already added Miles Rice, a point guard from Indiana, David Coit from Kansas, Pharrell Payne, who played at A&M for Buzz Williams, who had massive games in the tournament in the first two rounds. I think he went for 25-10 and 24-something, and could be, you know, one of those players on the verge of really blossoming. Big 6'9", kind of a 4. Elijah Sanders, he got from Virginia, 3-point shooter. Andre Mills from A&M. Solomon Washington, one of the better defenders in the country last year from A&M. And George Turkson from A&M. 8 players he's already signed in the portal. Maryland's portal class so far, at least according to Sports Illustrated, is number 6 in the country. Michigan, Louisville, Kentucky, LSU, Creighton, ahead of Maryland at 6, then Washington, UCLA, Indiana, and Miami. 8 players added, more to come, for a team that not only lost all of its players that were potentially, you know, players that still had eligibility to come back, but lost their committed recruit as well. So he still has a rest of the roster to fill out, but the 8 players that he has signed in the portal have Maryland's portal class ranked 6th in the country. So more to come. The player Bryce Lindsey from James Madison, who apparently does not have Maryland on his final list, which I know that there was hope among Maryland fans that he would. Bryce Lindsey, big-time portal guy. Rodney Rice still has not made a decision, although he did go to social media late last week to talk about the 6 schools that he's considering. Maryland was one of them. Tennessee, where Gillespie went. Villanova, where his head coach went. Gonzaga, USC, and Auburn, all part of that list. I would love it if Rodney Rice came back. I think the odds are less than 50-50. I think a lot of Maryland people believe the odds are much less than 50-50. It's a shame because I started talking about Rodney Rice, you know, midway through the conference schedule, maybe early in the conference schedule. I think he's an NBA player by this time next year. I think he's a guy that gets is talked about as certainly a drafted player, if not a first-round potential talent by the time we get here next year. You bring Rodney Rice back on this team to go with what they've added in the portal, and all of a sudden Maryland and this idea that they were going to take a massive short-term hit based on the way everything went down goes away, and Maryland all of a sudden has at least some players capable of competing. Look, college basketball's changed, man. We don't know what you're going to get year to year when you have this much roster change and this much roster turnover. You know, last year, you know, Kansas number one in the country preseason, they're out in the first round. Carolina top 10 out in the first round after having to win a play-in, you know, a first four game to get in. You just, every year is going to be so much more unpredictable because you can't even, you know, in ranking the portal classes, decide whether or not it's going to be great chemistry together, whether or not the pieces individually, which may be ranked high, will come together in the way that, say, Maryland's did last year. I mean, Maryland, with their three adds in the portal and their one freshman player, obviously, in Derrick Queen, is a perfect fit. Going to have a coach. Got to have a coach that sees and has a vision for how these pieces will fit together when you are potentially only going to play together for one season. All right, Denny McCarthy shot 71 one under on his final round yesterday at Augusta to finish tied for 29th. He will join us. We'll talk about what it was like for him over the weekend, but really the incredible drama that turned into Rory McIlroy for about 4.5 to nearly 5 hours yesterday afternoon. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show. The Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app.